Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 5, texts number 24 and 25. The subject matter is it's the beginning of a very long section of Third Canto Bhagavatam, which deals with the process of creation. In the language of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 topics that a Mahapurana will cover, 5 topics that a Purana will cover, and 3 topics that an Upapurana will cover. So the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam include Sarga and Visarga, creation and sub-creation. So this is the creation part. It's what Vishnu does. The sub-creation is what Brahma does. After Vishnu does, he takes what Brahma does, and because he takes what Vishnu does, and then he works with it. So it looks like he's the creator, at least to some people. And he knows he's the, Prabhupada sometimes uses the word chief engineer or chief person who he takes the plan, like a what's the occupation, construction, you know, he's somebody at a construction company. No, he takes the architectural plan, he takes the ingredients, and you know, he organizes the whole construction of a thing that there's already a plan for, there's already ingredients for, there's already the money for, there's already the everything for, there's always already a purpose for it. He just puts the whole thing together, chief engineer. But it's not just, you know, mechanical engineering or civil engineering or electrical engineering or environmental engineering. He's the professor of all engineering departments. He's brilliant. An ordinary living entity can't, like, try to break down one of those engineering department components, and it's endless. Like, you know, the construction of a cell. One cell, just a little puny little cell. And it's baffling. Or, you know, even the plumbing part of that little cell. Baffling. They can see how it works, but they can't make one. They can see how some of it works, but they can't make one. Or like Prabhupada's example of a mosquito. Okay, you can make a 747. Let's see you make a mosquito. A little machine that's so tiny, it can go up, down, sideways, or any direction, and it can reproduce itself. Let's see you make one mosquito. Mosquito, he said. They cannot. Here's the ingredients. Go ahead, make one mosquito. They cannot do. Or, Vendri Narayan Prabhu was sharing this with me about Bay Bridge in San Francisco. It's at the time that it was constructed, it was the world's longest and largest suspension bridge. So I didn't know this, but he, because I was speaking about, you know, how does a spider learn how to make a web? There's no spider school. You have to go to the university, to spider university, to learn how to make a spider web. No, there's no such thing. But spiders all over the world, they know how to make webs. And they make different types of webs according to different types of spiders. And it's the same all over the world. So, how does that happen? And you can say, okay, it's just genetically determined. It just had to be. This spider makes this web, that spider makes that web. Because it's in their genes, okay. How did that configuration of genes take place? All over the world the same way, with slight variations. Chance. Oh, come on. You know, so this is the topic that we're getting into here addresses the same issue. What's the cause of creation? The material scientists would have us learn in school. It's chance. If you want to get an A in your exam, that's the answer you have to give. There's laws of nature, and there's matter, and don't ask the question, where does matter come from? Because the answer is, it's primordial. It just is. Like you say God is, we say matter is. And the laws that govern matter, don't ask us how do those laws come into being and what, who enforces the law. Don't ask that question because it just is. That's primordial. That's all there is. There's just matter and the laws that govern matter. That's God. That's the cause of everything. Whatever you say, God, the cause of everything is God, and that's what the cause of everything is matter. And laws that govern matter, if you want an A in your exam, that's what you have to say. And science is just studying what those laws are, what's the push and pull, and so you can get a degree, you can get a job. They'll hire you to, you know, push and pull the material laws to get things that we want for sense gratification. That's the program. Are you on board with it or not? You want a job? That's the program. Hop on board. If not, forget it. Tough luck, Charlie. Because there's only one thing. Matter and the laws that govern matter. Repeat after me. It's all in one thing. You want an A in your exam? That's what you got to say. So, spiders don't go to spider school, but scientists study spiders. I didn't know this. He said to build the San Francisco Bridge, the Bay Bridge, scientists studied the construction of spider webs to understand, you know, laws of physics to apply to make the Bay Bridge. To have the longest suspension bridge. They went to spider school. Because science can reproduce that which is in nature, and according to their intelligence compared to Brahma's intelligence, they can replicate something like what's already existing. That's what they can do. They can't create something new. They can replicate that which already exists. At best. Where did the original something come from? Chance. Come on. You big scientist, how much intelligence is involved in figuring out how to make the Bay Bridge? And you say the original principles of spiders, it just happened by chance? You give yourself the credit, but you don't give it. The intelligence that's driving the spider? Any credit? My dear sir, you're unduly proud and foolish. So here the Bhagavatam is giving one of the reasons why there's so much dedicated to this principle of sarga, is because it's a sakho punch to this mechanistic science point of view that all there is matter and the laws governing matter, and that's it. But it's not a new program. It's not something that, like, you know, Microsoft or Apple come up with a new program. They had computer engineers, IT folks that came up with the program. It's an old program. It's just a rerun. The old program is Kannada, one of the six doctrines taken from the Vedas, that says it's called classically the atomic theory. And it says the same thing. All they did is, like, you know, did a rerun. Put another label on it and become, you know, famous for being mechanistic scientists that have this or that theory. What's the cause? Chance. Kind of like a combination of chance and the laws of nature. Random variations, in the language of Charles Darwin. The topic is not one of the favorite topics of all devotees, because it's something like chewing molasses. It's hard to chew. It's like, okay, let me just swallow this thing and go on to the next, something that's, like, you know, juicy and nice. It's a little tough going at times when you go into the topic, but there's a volume of it because of its importance. Like in Bhagavad Gita, the topic, there's more verses on the three modes of material nature in Bhagavad Gita than any other topic, because of its importance. One might say, you know, the essence is just surrender to Krishna. Who cares about these modes of nature thing? Just surrender to Krishna. Well, a lot of us are trying to surrender to Krishna, but we're finding the modes of nature are, you know, we're bumping into them, and they're preventing us from surrendering to Krishna somehow. It was like puzzling. How did that happen? I just wanted to surrender to Krishna. And I met this big bully called the mode of passion, and this really ugly guy called the mode of ignorance. And, you know, it's hard to surrender to Krishna with that stuff. I mean, I was going along okay until this bully guy came, that ugly guy came, and I was, next thing you know, I forgot all about surrendering to Krishna. What happened? So part of the process of understanding how creation comes into being is to keep our focus upon the cause of the creation, you know, what's behind stuff that happens. Because in our life, stuff happens. And remotely, there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although there's instrumental causes. You know, why did they do this to me? That's the instrumental cause. Then there's a remote cause. Oh. And if we're not mindful of the remote cause, guess what? We're in Maya. We're thinking, this is the cause. This is the cause of my happiness or my suffering. But Krishna teaches differently in Bhagavad. We're the cause of our happiness or our suffering, our fortune or misfortune. Sada sad yoni janmasu. And it has everything to do with how we regard Prakriti. If we regard Prakriti as this is an opportunity to enjoy. And according to my disposition to enjoy, I involve myself with Prakriti. And according to those choices, I create my good fortune, misfortune. I can't blame other causes. It's my own free will. And that law, there are laws of nature, and according to those laws of nature, I implicate myself in the actions and reactions of material nature. But I don't have to. What's the option? I can choose to see Prakriti as Krishna's. That was what we discussed yesterday. Before the creation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead existed. Alone. There was no material energy. There was no this manifest state of the material energy. There was no manifest state of living entities running around doing things. There were no things. There was no doing. There's no... The energies of the Lord were withdrawn. In this verse we're going to hear how the internal potency was active. The external and marginal potency was not active. It was dormant. And then the Lord decided by his own will, volition, these things should manifest. So it describes the very confidential, the inner contemplation of the Supreme Lord prior to and bringing about the creation, you know, the stuff that happens. It's philosophical. So some people like philosophy. Some people get bored with philosophy. But it's important for us to understand the relationship that we have with material energy and ultimately behind the material energy with the cause, the supreme cause. Because there are other intermediate causes besides Brahma as the sub-creation. Or secondary creation. There is matter itself. We're going to hear in these verses, matter itself is the cause. Huh? Matter itself is the cause? Well, it uses these terms, efficient cause and material cause. We'll break that down a little bit. Also philosophical. Bores some people, but it's important for us to understand. Ultimately, what's important for us to understand is behind everything, Krishna is there. And our objective in bhakti yoga is to connect with Krishna, not to like rearrange the configuration of material energy so that we're happy in this temporary place. That's not the purpose. It's to connect with Krishna. Okay, so at the very end, do we have a Bhagavad Gita? At the very end of the previous purport, Prabhupada refers to a verse from chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita. What's chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita about? What's the title? Most Confidential Knowledge. How does chapter 9 begin? Krishna says, this is the most confident, Rajavija Rajaguyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartamavyam. He says that through this knowledge one can get direct perception of the self, which is really amazing because the self is spiritual. And these eyes are material. So how are you supposed to see something spiritual by the use of something material? The answer is you can't. Okay. And how do you see if you can't? You see spiritually, or you see through the eyes of knowledge. See through the eyes of knowledge. What's that? you see things as Krishna sees. So it requires the most continental part is always thinking of Krishna, just as Vidura has this, was honored by Maitreya as having this capacity of always thinking of Krishna, becoming Krishna's devotee, worshipping Krishna, offering obeisances unto Krishna. He had that capacity, so he could see. Maitreya is providing this knowledge so he can see through the eyes of knowledge, through that submission unto Krishna. So Prabhupada refers to chapter 9, text number 7, because Krishna says, I'm now going to explain this most confidential knowledge unto you. And the first thing he starts speaking about is material nature. Huh? That's like, what about, you know, Rasalila and all that confidential stuff? He starts speaking about material nature and Krishna's relationship with material nature. Because if you can't understand ABC, how are you going to compose sentences? It's phony. It's pretense. It's ridiculous to understand confidential subjects about Krishna's pastimes if you can't understand Krishna's relationship with the creation. So that's where he starts. And he describes this mysterious relationship that Krishna has with his material energy. Where everything is resting in him. Everything is resting in him, but he is outside of everything. Huh? It's like saying, we're sitting in the room and we're outside the room. That's a contradiction. We can be inside the room, that's fine. We can be outside the room, that's fine. How can we be inside the room and outside the room at the same time? You can't. But Krishna can. He can be inside of everything and outside, and everything is inside him. And he is within everything, and he is outside of everything. That's like triple. Behold my mystic opulence. Because there's this inseparableness of Krishna's energy with Krishna. We discussed this yesterday. Energy and energetic are inseparable. Yet they're not the same. So depending upon the usage of language, Krishna, everything is within Krishna, that his energies are within him. But he's outside of, his existence is not dependent upon his energies. His energies are dependent upon him. So he's outside of everything. So as he expands the creation, it's inseparable from him. But he's separate from that which is inseparable from him. He has his own existence in Krishna Loka. He's playing on his flute and herding the cows with the cowherd boys and enjoying pastimes with the gopis while the material creation is resting upon him. Not a blade of grass moves without his sanction, but he's not like got a supercomputer brain going and saying, okay, blade of grass, now you can move. No, you can't move that, not that one over there. And every single, you know, thing that happens, he's got circuit overload going on all the time. He can't pay attention to the gopis and the cowherd boys and the cows because he's got all this business to deal with. Got his abacus moving things and calculator and multiprocessors. It's going on the strength of his potencies and his expansions. And in chapter 9, text number 7, Krishna explains that at the end of each millennium, that's like the life of Brahma, there's a day of Brahma, there's a partial annihilation, and the end of the day of, excuse me, the whole life of Brahma is a total annihilation, Krishna withdraws. The living entities, matter, for that matter, even the Paramatma expansion within every atom, because the atoms are withdrawn, so the Paramatma feature is then situated within Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu. The universes are gone. Where's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu? It's Mahavishnu. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. So that's Bhagavad Gita. And now we're getting Srimad Bhagavatam of how he creates them again. See the relationship? It's undergraduate and graduate study. Text 24. The Lord, the undisputed proprietor of everything, was the only seer. And we can extend that and say, during the time of cosmic manifestation, he alone is the only seer. There's a very brilliant analysis of that principle in the second canto, where one of the parts of it is our seeing capacity is dependent upon the Lord's seeing capacity. If the Lord is not seeing, we can't see. Because the Lord can see, we can see. Because our capacity to see, our capacity to do anything comes from the Lord. So because he's the seer, we can see. Therefore, we can say he is the only seer. And we're the dependent seer. Lord is the only proprietor. We're the dependent proprietor. We're the secondary proprietor. But he's the proprietor. He's the only seer. So before creation, he's the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time. And thus, listen to this, he felt imperfect. Huh? He who was perfect felt imperfect. Prabhupada explains it's a simile. What's a simile? You know what a simile is? Yes, it is. A comparison. Something that you know and something that you don't know. So something that we don't know is compared to something that we know. So that thing that we don't know, we used to have a vague idea of what that thing we don't know is like. So a simile begins with like or as. Or in Sanskrit it's yata tata. As this, so that. One of the 26 qualities of a devotee is that a devotee is poetic. Did you know that? Any poets in the crowd here? You're a poet? She's the poet. Okay. We're all poetic. Some express it a little bit more than others. Because to describe the soul and describe Krishna, we have to use similes and metaphors, like or as. So like, you know, Rupa Goswami might describe the face of Krishna was like a shining moon. So it's a simile. There's some qualities of the moon. It gives light. It's very cooling and soothing. When Krishna smiles, it's like the radiance of a moon casting it, after the heat of the day, it's casting its cooling rays upon that person. When Krishna smiles, something like that. So it's not the moon in the sky, but it's like, it has a quality like. And a simile or some comparison is as good as there are similar elements, because there's always going to be dissimilar elements. Anyway, this is a simile saying that Krishna felt imperfect. Or incomplete, it's described in the purport. The incompleteness was that there are living entities and there are eternally perfected living entities, and then there's this other category, living entities that are in the conditioned state. And those that are in the conditioned state, he wanted to make an arrangement for them to restore their perfected condition. They're happy, joyful, in loving relationship with him condition. But there was no facility for that. And that was his incompleteness, his feeling of incompleteness. He wanted that to happen, that they would have facility to come again to him, to turn their attention again to him. He wanted that. And that's the impetus for creation, one of them, one of the principal ones. He felt imperfect without his plenary and separated parts and parcels. The material energy was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested. So now, the purport. The Lord is the supreme seer, because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic manifestation. So by his glance, the dormant material energy became active. At that time, the seer was there. But the external energy over which the glance of the Lord is cast was not present. That is to say, it was dormant within him. He felt somewhat insufficient, like a husband feeling lonely in the absence of his wife. This is a poetic simile. The Supreme Lord, Mahavishnu, was present. This is how it's described in Brahma Samhita. It's a parallel description with some details that aren't here. But it's the same description. So he was enjoying his pastimes with Rama Devi. Rama Devi is the name of the goddess of fortune who is the consort of Mahavishnu, just like Narayan's consort is Lakshmi or Ram's consort is Sita. Mahavishnu and Rama Devi. So Rama Devi, in the language of the Brahma Samhita, has her reflected feature, like an object in its reflection. And that reflected feature is known as pradan, or simply in our common terminology, maya. But she was idle. She didn't have anything to do. And Mahavishnu felt compassion. She wants something to do. Let me give her something to do. She wants to do something. She's dormant now. She wants to do something. I'll give her some service. Here's living entities. Give them, keep them busy. Yes, some service. I'll keep them really busy, I promise. So busy they'll have no time to disturb your pastimes with Rama Devi and the spiritual world. I'll keep them so busy. They'll always say, I'm sorry, I have no time. And they won't even say thank you. But that's okay. I don't mind if they don't say thank you. I'll keep them very busy. So by his drashta, his glance, living entities were injected within the field of pradhan. And by the contact of the living entities and the Lord's time energy, because you can't have maya activities without time, so time was carried by the glands. And then the undifferentiated sum total of the material energy started to differentiate. You know, like a big warehouse all jumbled up, and little pieces started to come out from most subtle first. That's coming up in Kapila Dev's teachings toward the end of this canto. I won't go through that whole procedure. But unfolding of the material energy until now we have another name. It's called Mahatattva. Mahatattva is the warehouse where everything's divided. Pradhan is the warehouse where everything's all jumbled up. It's all there, just dormant and jumbled, undifferentiated. You can't tell this from that. The glance of the Lord brings about or precipitates, is the catalyst that precipitates the differentiation of the elements. And then the mixing of the elements according to the desire of the living entity to enjoy. And that's the part that Brahma does. He puts the, you know, the elements together to make this body, this mind, that mind, these parents, those relatives, and the whole program. This species, that species. By design. The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, and that is its main purpose. So people may ask you sometime, could you explain the purpose of creation? Now we know the purpose of creation. It's one part of the purpose of creation. Generally, Prabhupada describes that there's two. One is the living entity's desire to enjoy independently from Krishna. Krishna gives them the chance to try. Although the label on that chance says, warning, it's not possible. But you can go ahead and try because you want to. But it's right on the label. Warning, it's not possible. Not like, maybe it won't happen. It won't happen. Warning, I'll take 10 of those, please. You know, they have buyer beware kinds of notices. This is a buyer beware notice. It can't happen. I want to enjoy. All right. Here it is. There's no enjoyment. I want to enjoy. All right, here it is. And the other purpose is to give the opportunity for living entities to restore their proper spirit, proper consciousness, and return back to Him. And so there's an owner's manual that says, here's how you use this machine called Prakriti in His service. How you properly regard and respect Prakriti and various living entities in their different positions, how to offer proper respect to them in a dharmic manner. And, oh, by the way, keep your mind always fixed on Krishna. As Krishna says, perform your prescribed duty. And always think of me. Okay, that's the operator's manual. You just have to learn how to use the manual. Apply it to the machine, material nature. The obstacle is our rebellious spirit that says, I want to enjoy. makes it tough. So, like, you know, follow the operator's manual. When it's not really tough, it's simple. It's natural. It's joyful. It's fun. It's a big relief. But we're used to the struggle. What will I do without this struggle? That's life. What will I do without life? Gotta have a struggle. The Lord is so kind that in the absence of such a manifestation, that material creation, He feels something wanting, and thus the creation takes place. That's the impetus, the Lord's compassion. Or, stated differently, is feeling that there's something wanting. This is imperfect. Although He's in the realm of perfect, there are living entities that don't want to be part of that realm of perfect. They want to enjoy separately from Him. And so they have nothing to do in this dormant state, and material nature has nothing to do. The reflection of Rama Devi has nothing to do. So He wants to give her something to do. It's important. The Lord empowers Maya so that she has something to do, and He gives the facility to the living entities so they have something to do. Like trying, illusion, trying to enjoy independently from Him. So it's twofold. And the process, the fulfillment of the purpose of the creation is both so that the living entities can turn their attention again to Krishna, and so that the external energy can be engaged in Krishna's service. And what happens is this place becomes Vaikuntha. The material energy stops acting as material energy. It starts acting as internal energy. Yes. Instead of acting to bind the living entity, it acts to provide opportunities for service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the spiritual world. Prabhupada was once asked by a reporter, "Swamiji, your movement is growing very fast. So many people are coming forward and joining your movement. What would happen if the whole world became Krishna conscious?" And Prabhupada's immediate reply was, "Don't worry, it won't happen." Then he paused and said, "But if it were to happen, this place would become Vaikuntha." Not like Vaikuntha, Vaikuntha. 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 A place without anxiety. Even where things are temporary and so on, we can live in this place that's temporary. It's now you see it, now you don't. Temporary. And be in no anxiety. No anxiety. Life without anxiety, what's that? It's Vaikuntha. No anxiety. Even things come and go, and it's sometimes up and sometimes down, and sometimes this feature of duality and sometimes that feature of duality, and I'm without anxiety. Because I've taken shelter of the position of simply serving Krishna. Whatever feature duality wants to show, it's fine. Because behind is Krishna. And I'm just smiling at Krishna. It can be this, it can be that. It's fine. This service, that service. I may have my preference, I like this service. But Krishna's giving me that service, so that service is fine too. I like that service because Krishna wants me to do that service. although the creation of the internal potency was manifested, the other potency appeared to be sleeping. And the Lord wanted to awaken her to activity. So he did so by his glance. That's the reference to drashta. By his glance alone, his dormant pradhan, material energy, undifferentiated sum total of material energy, became activated. It is the compassion of the Lord for the sleeping energy that he wants to see her awaken for enjoyment, like the other wives who are awake. That means the pradhan becomes mahatattva, becomes differentiated material elements, and if the living entities, that's us, if we act properly in relation to the material energy gets to be connected to directly to Krishna's service too, along with us. It's a nice service to Prakriti. Yay! That's what Mahavishnu wanted. And we can be the agents to help make it happen. We just got, you know, cooperate a little bit with Krishna's program. Instead of like deleting Krishna's program, but like closing our eyes and forgetting, and writing our own program called I Want to Enjoy program, and there's different varieties of it. The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls. Sounds like a Chaitanya Charitamrita description of why Lord Chaitanya appeared. Yes? Hey, there's a connection between Lord Chaitanya's appearance and Mahavishnu's creation. It's the fulfillment of that purpose of creation. Listen to the language. The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls to the real life of spiritual consciousness, so that they may thus become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha lokas. Since the Lord is such Chidananda Vigraha, he likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa. So now we're all the way, you know, in Goloka with rasa dance. Just see what Prabhupada did. It's like he's one moment he's speaking about Mahavishnu's glancing, and the next he's got the living entities in the rasa dance. There's a gap in between, but there's instruments to help make that desire of the Lord manifest. He likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa, because participation with the Lord in his eternal rasa lila is the highest living condition, perfect in spiritual bliss and eternal knowledge and purport. Following the undergraduate study, and then there's the graduate study, and then there's the postgraduate study. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is the postgraduate study where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami takes us into a description of Lord Chaitanya's appearance and the features of the Panchatattva who assisted Lord Chaitanya in fulfilling Krishna's desire, although he's Krishna himself, fulfilling Krishna's desire to see the purpose of creation consummated, fulfilled. So there's the creation with a purpose, but the purpose was not happening. So he appeared, Krishna appeared, along with his various associates to make sure that it happened. So we often have this idea from Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Sankirtan mission of Lord Chaitanya is the impetus for it, for us, is to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya. What's that desire of Lord Chaitanya? Same as here. See that the living entities who have lost their way in the journey back to Godhead, the purpose for which the material creation was made, they got lost. So to find those lost souls and return them to the path to Krishna, and to assist Lord Chaitanya, is what the Sankirtan movement is. I can tell you, it's in the heart of the Sankirtan devotees that are going here and there and all over the place to find those wayward souls and give them, at least give them the opportunity to connect with the internal potency of Krishna through the medium of devotional service, through Srila Prabhupada's books, or through the chanting of the holy name, or various festivals where they can become attracted to the process of devotional service, or various outreach programs that, you know, find this variety, that variety of conditioned souls wandering and give them the opportunity to, again, become connected to the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we become very fortunate just to become instruments of that fulfilling the desire of Lord Chaitanya, which is nothing other than the desire of Mahavishnu when he does this act of creating. That's the purpose. So it's a very confidential service to be engaged in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. It's simultaneously good for us and good for others. Especially if we're in the right consciousness, it's especially good for us and even more so good for others. And even if we're kind of like not mature in our realization of Krishna consciousness, it's still good for us and still good for others. That the more we can become Krishna conscious, the more it is good for us and the more it is good for others. We become a better instrument. So our role is not, Lord Brahma's role is in this process, fulfilling the Lord's desire for creation. And then all the details and sub-details and complexities. But it's all stemming from the Lord's desire. So I thought I would get further than I did. So we'll just continue tomorrow with, drilling down a little bit further on this material energy that's now being activated by the Lord. And I'll just give you coming attractions for tomorrow morning's class. There's this language about efficient cause and material cause of material nature. There's a causation from prakriti, from material nature, in bringing about creation. But those material nature doesn't bring about life. It's not that life comes from matter. It's life comes from life. So Prabhupada used that phrase again and again, and we're going to discuss it a little bit more tomorrow. Not threadbare, but a little bit more tomorrow. That behind the material and efficient cause, we'll discuss it a little bit, what that means. There's the ultimate cause. It's like dominoes. You know what dominoes are? You know what dominoes are? So you line up a stack of dominoes, then you knock one of the dominoes over, and then knocks the next domino over, knocks the next. It's like a house of cards. Make a nice house of cards and then pull one card and the whole house of cards falls. Called material life. House of cards. So, you're in a crowd on Janmashtami trying to take peaceful darshan of the deities, and somebody pushes you from behind. And behind them, there's somebody pushing them from behind. Behind them, there's somebody pushing them from behind. It's, hey, stop pushing. I can't help it. There are people pushing me, and there are people pushing me, and there are people pushing me because they want to get darshan. They're way in the back. So just push people. You know how it goes. So one may think that, you know, this is the cause of my happiness or distress, but there's ultimately a remote cause in all circumstances. In all circumstances. And we take responsibility for just being involved in the whole soup, the whole domino program, by our desire to be an enjoyer within Prakriti. And then there's these causes and further causes. So we'll go into that a little bit tomorrow. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes?
Prabhupada's answer on the kind explanation of the purpose behind the material creation, it brings up like how compassionate Krishna is in giving this facility to get perfected and go back to him. I have a couple of questions, Maharaj. Sometimes I find myself in a situation and it's tendency is there to easily to point fingers at external persons or this caste rate or that caste rate, but the situation was arranged by Krishna. But
or at least sanctioned by Krishna.
Sanctioned by Krishna. And some cases, like, I find it very difficult to, like, accept that. And what should be my mood during that time? And how should I proceed and get myself out of that?
Krishna's advice in Bhagavad Gita, the beginning advice, you can start at the beginning. If you can go beyond the beginning, that's fine too. But the beginning is tatikshava. You tolerate. And the reasoning behind the tolerating is to see that the appearance arises from sense perception only. That's the reasoning. So there has to be, like, you know, your intelligent light has to be on for that one to work. Because otherwise, if my intelligence light is off, I don't care. You know, sense perception. Look what they did. But if your intelligent light is on, it's arising from sense perception. I'm experiencing the duality of happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, joy and sorrow, etc. Light and dark, up and down, black and white, and so on. It's arising from sense perception only. That is to say, as spirit soul, I really have nothing to do with any of this. I really have nothing to do with any of this. It's detachment. But I may not have spiritual realization yet. So at least the injunction is tolerate it on the strength of knowledge with your intelligence light on. Okay, it's arising from, I'm not exactly sure, especially I'm not feeling it's arising from sense. What I'm feeling is, but that's it. My intelligence says it's arising from sense perception. That's how Krishna sees it. So let me contemplate how Krishna sees it. And if I have that shelter in Krishna, I can tolerate it. I don't get lost in the material energy. I can be, to some degree at least, with Krishna. And you can consider it. What does that mean? Arising from sense perception. You can contemplate. So you can get, become situated in knowledge by that contemplation. Because that understanding is further expanded. But minimally, you tolerate. And when you withdraw consciousness from asat, be sure to place consciousness in sat. Because otherwise, they're not going to hold up. It's going to blow over. They'll get caught in the material energy again. So transcendental knowledge is an initial, it's not the ultimate, but it's an initial boat to cross over the ocean of material difficulty. For one who is situated in transcendental knowledge, Krishna says, one can easily cross over the whole ocean of material suffering, whole ocean of material existence, just by being situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge. Except the boat's a little slippery. That's the beginning, is to tolerate. And when you invest consciousness in sat, then there's this feeling of fullness. And as you're feeling fullness, that disturbance of duality diminishes. Then you rise above it. Not just tolerate it, you rise above it. To in a very advanced stage, it becomes insignificant. A speck. Insignificant. Not like you can't see it, but it's insignificant because you're so full. Until we're that stage, tolerate. Look to sat. And practice. Our primary practice is the chanting of Maha Mantra, bringing our attention to Krishna. And what we find is, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, our mind wants to go to asat. Why did this happen? Or what's going to happen next? And not being present with Krishna. So practice being with Krishna, with bringing attention to sat. Something else? Yes.
In the beginning, you were explaining how the scientists studied the spiders before creating their bridge. And you see in many situations people. So, in that process, they actually are not giving a credit to the original source.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
They are being ungrateful for what. Ungrateful for what they have gained.
That's right.
Without giving credit for that. So, is it that so? Learning to be grateful for what everything that we are receiving, and that feelings of gratefulness is itself is a cause of the devotion, or
it's the beginning of. Awakening, at the beginning, it's like the little bud, little sprout of the awakening of our love for Krishna. It's the beginning. It's very important. It will grow. It's a very, very important beginning. But one has to be reflective or be in the mode of goodness or slow down from the enjoying program enough to consider what's really going on here. Without Krishna's mercy, Zippo. So let me count the ways in which Krishna is being very merciful, especially through the guidance of scripture. And we're getting the seed of that. But the whole purpose of creation is the because Krishna wants us to have an opportunity to again come to Him. That's the purpose. Wow. He's very kind. Although, you know, it looks pretty rough out here. If we take up the proper purpose, that roughness we can tolerate, transcend, and it becomes insignificant. Yes?
Gratitude, when will it minimize the me concept? My concept.
I'm listening.
When will it make it disappear? Or will it be an instrument alone?
Will it be an instrument alone? What's your question?
In minimizing selfishness.
Yeah. Say whole sentence, please.
The feelings of gratitude. Will they make the me, my concept disappear?
Gradually, sure. But it's following what I just said previously. When bhakti becomes mature, certainly misconceptions, material conceptions of I and mine are dismissed altogether. It's inversely proportionate. As we surrender to Krishna, that hold that selfishness has upon us diminishes. Yes?
Maharaj, I had a question about this verse where it says prime goal of creation is to get the lost souls back to the spiritual world, to Krishna.
Yeah.
So I also it came to my mind about one verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says out of thousands one will try to endeavor to go to this path, and out of those thousands only one will know me in full. So I was just trying to compare if the whole purpose of the creation is to get the souls back, this ratio seems little bit to my mind it seems.
But the product wasn't very well designed. That's what you're intending to say? Well, like we know from Bhagavad Gita, after what to speak of, the generic living entity, even Arjuna, Krishna didn't interfere with the free will of Arjuna. After explaining everything, what was Krishna's conclusion? You deliberate and feel what is best for you to do. So Krishna doesn't, while giving us an opportunity, he doesn't take away our free will. He doesn't force us to surrender to him. Correct? We can say yes or no. So the problem is not the design was deficient. The problem is the rebellious spirit is very strong. And another is the compassion of Krishna is he gives relief in different degrees. One can attain a heavenly realm more easily than one can attain liberation. One can attain the liberation of merging with the Supreme as Sayuja Mukti more easily than returning to Krishna Loka in a loving relationship. Krishna more easily rewards that, then returning to Krishna Loka. Because for the person that wants to become one with the Supreme, there's less surrender. It's, in one sense, it's very severe, but it's less surrender than Krishna, I am yours. I acknowledge your position, I'm your servant, as you wish, please engage me. That's more surrender. It's more loving also. And our spirit towards loving Krishna is the issue, the primordial issue. So it's one thing to like be in the state of oneness with the Supreme, but not having to surrender to Krishna and be his servant. The pride and false ego in material existence are it's the first element that appears, and it's the last element to go. Pride and false ego. So the design is not faulty. It says the living entities are quite rebellious. So there's stages of getting relief and ultimately release and ultimately fully restored. Because there's gradations of living entities and their disposition toward Krishna. He doesn't interfere with our free will. He's giving us options. We can select from the menu. His statement is, it's very rare for one to select this one from the menu. It's just statistical. It's statistical, but it's not saying, you know, I don't want them to come to me. Or let me make it so hard. Hardly anyone's going to come to me. They'll just struggle. In this age of Kali, the process of chanting the holy name, it's so simple, as is commonly described. And it's true, even a child can do. But we can't do. For some people, it's too simple. They need something, you know, more difficult. But they're not prepared to do the more difficult. It's so simple. They don't do. To do. Something else? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Please accept my greetings, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Can you please let us know why sometimes we call Lord Brahma and Shiva and sometimes we call demigods?
Okay. Do you have a problem with that?
I mean, I'm trying to understand like why sometimes we call demigods one, sometimes we call the Lord.
Oh. The Lord, the title Lord is with respect. I mean, in England, a title of someone of great respect is Lord something or other, isn't it? So, and the language of the scripture, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra. So there it's recognizing their position, their elevated position, and to some degree it's recognizing their position as an Ishwar, a controller, as a lord of something. So it's an honorific title. Giving honor where honor is due is fine. But there's a difference between Ishwara and Parameshwara, the controller of all controllers, the Lord of all lords. That's unique. The cause of all causes. We can say something is the cause of something. But we should bear in mind that there's a cause of that cause. That's the effect of some prior cause. while we're identifying something as a cause, or something as a Lord, or something as a having some chain reaction network in the whole process of God's spiritual and material creation. So there are controllers of that which He is the creator of ultimately. So Lord, it's appropriate.
But Maharaj, like, so we need to understand, like, Brahma, Ishwara is a demigod, not a god.
Correct. He's not the supreme. The distinction is demigods. You know, let's make a further distinction. There are 33 million departmental heads. The water department, the air department, the light department, this department, that department. They're administrating the departments of the government. 33 million demigods. Generically, Prabhupada sometimes, quite often, he'll also make the distinction, but sometimes includes Lord Brahma. He's not an administrative demigod. Lord Shiva, he's not an administrative demigod. But it's a distinction between the Supreme Personality of God or the cause of all causes and those that are servants of the Supreme Personality, the cause of all causes. So in that sense, they're included in this category of demigods, in contrast with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in that sense, they're demigods. They're not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In a further refinement, they're not administrative demigods. But they're in charge of creation and destruction of this creation. And the power to do so is derived from the Personality of Godhead. Like, you know, the verses that we just read, during this period of cosmic annihilation, Lord Brahma is not there. Lord Shiva is not there. The living entities are not there. The plenary expansions of the Lord are not there. They're in a dormant state, waiting for the Lord to give them some service to do. So in that capacity of servants, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, they have some service. They're empowered to look after the affairs of the universe. Yes?
Today we were talking about the cause for the manifestation. Mm-hmm. The question was, if a simile was given also, or I don't know if this is too off topic, but for the dissolution of the universe, if there's another similar given, the main reason why it's absorbed back in.
I'm not aware of another simile. Now the first simile is from a sleeping state to a waking state, so the reverse would be like, you know, a parent putting their child to bed. Okay, nighty night, time to take rest. Let me tell you a Krishna book story. Something like that. Okay, time to wake up. Yes.
Like, in one lecture,
yeah.
You said about the chakra.
I said about the chakra?
Yeah.
What did I say about the chakra?
Like how it's in all the Vishnu temples.
It's on top of all the Vishnu temples, yeah.
But why is it not in the Bhutanic temples?
I don't know.
Yeah.
He didn't see. There is.
Okay. Is that all right? Yes.
I have a really basic question.
Okay.
What exactly is mercy? I mean,
what exactly is mercy?
It's kind of hard sometimes, especially since it's not something tangible. I understand like some aspect, like you know, like when it's like compassion or like you know, care and love that's given to you, like in this devotional process.
Yeah.
But I mean, I hear it so many times used so like widely and commonly, like you know. Even if you contribute for this devotional cause, you get mercy, you do this, you get mercy. Sometimes it gets really hard to distinguish, you know, get the idea of what really mercy is. And, I mean, I don't really...
Well, in simple, using the reference that you just made, mercy means a favorable, a particular favorable disposition towards someone. Using the example that you just gave, you contribute towards this cause and you get special mercy. So, Prabhupada gives this example, the sun shines everywhere. When the rain falls everywhere. It's not like, oh, there's a rock, I'm not going to fall over there. I'll only fall on the land. And there's some water. What's the use of falling on the water? I'll just fall on the land. The rain falls everywhere. The mercy comes down everywhere. Similarly. But so mercy is for everyone. It's not that God is merciful to those who contribute for this cause and for everyone else. You know, they're the rocks and the rivers. Forget it. You know, just take a hike until you're ready to get the mercy. But so it's some special inclination, some special kindness. And you know, the Sanskrit word is kriti or sukriti, some pious merit, where it's kind of like you know an entitlement to some special mercy. And one can misuse that also, that merit that comes. It can become like like Rikasura. He underwent austerities to get Lord Shiva's mercy, and what did he want? And what form of mercy did he want? He wanted the benediction that whoever's head he touched would break open in 100 pieces. Duskriti. And then he wanted to turn to try it out by touching Lord Shiva's head. So Lord Shiva went to Vishnu. Vishnu, Vishnu, what to do? Well, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So he lost his merit because it was misapplied. But especially in addition to the rain that falls everywhere and the sun that shines everywhere, it's some special dispensation or inclination towards an individual or a group of individuals to receive special dispensation of the Supreme, most merciful Lord unto those who are become special recipients or special have some special eligibility for the special mercy. It's kind of like that. But and all of the things that you said, kindness, care, concern, love, compassion. In what form does that mercy come? Real mercy is that which restores us in our spiritual position, not just gives us the fulfillment of some desire. So we get some mercy to get, you know, wealth or get something. in the sequence of four things called Purushartha, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, persons commonly engage in Dharma or religious activity so that they get some merit, some sukriti, that then helps them be prosperous materially. They get artha, or wealth. And the purpose of that wealth, commonly, is sense gratification, how it's applied. I can get things that I like because I have wealth. And because I want to get things that I like, I'll do my dharma, so I'll get things that I like by the agency of wealth and economic prosperity. But the meaning of artha, literal meaning of artha, is something desired, or that which is wanted. Just as the opposite is anartha, is that which is unwanted. So anartha nivritti is eradication of things unwanted. And artha is things that are wanted. So most people want material prosperity so that they can enjoy their senses. That's the material program. So for the devotee, mercy is the opposite. It's freeing one from the propensity for gaining things temporary, and instead taking shelter in sat, gaining things that are eternal. That's what real mercy is. And that's the mercy that's being described here. The Lord wants to give mercy to the living entities, that is, so they can come again to Him. So He gave the creation, and with the creation, we find from Bhagavad Gita, He gave the principles of sacrifice unto Vishnu, so that purpose could be fulfilled. And by neglecting sacrifice, it's gone to, varieties of sense gratification, minus the real purpose of sacrifice. And seeing that condition, the Lord again appeared to teach people the principle and how to perform it. That's mercy. From a Vaishnava point of view particularly, that agency or facility that's specifically directed, special kindness to restore our loving relationship with Krishna. That's our conception of what is mercy. The other is incomplete, using the language of the verse. Incomplete, well intended but misplaced. Saving the coat of the drowning man. Tension is good. Anything else? Yes?
You
like that one, huh?
Yeah.
Whatever I receive, I'm trying to give it water. In that, I feel that I'm cultivating this, first of all, for myself, I can apply it, and then also like setting an example first, instead of suggesting others and trying to just rule over or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just another Maya, right?
So I just wanted to hear a little more about this, how to set an example.
It's a service. You have children. And part of what you're doing as the mother of those children is setting an example. And that's a service. Right? You do like that. I know you do like that. Yeah, but you do like that. You try to do like that, let's say. So that's different than, look, I'm big and you're small, and as long as you're small and I'm big, you do what I say, right? That's not the mood. It's service. As mother, you're serving. You're serving 24/7. You're serving. And part of your service is to set a nice example, because that's part of your service. Same, take it from that, out of that context, and in the context of, you know, false ego is pervasive. So you can take something very pure and nice, like being an instrument of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission, and think, I'm big, you're small, I'm going to save you, because you're a conditioned soul. And I'm a member of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan, and I'm going to save you. That's like, you know, false ego. So we don't cultivate like that any more than, you know, setting an example for your children is bossing them around. So it should be done for the purpose of purification and fulfilling the desire of Lord Chaitanya. It's a service. Recognizing, as you bring up the question, false ego is, you know, somehow gets its way into everything that we do. So that component is there. Let me be vigilant to not act with false ego. It's a service for my purification and for the Lord's satisfaction. And to be part of making this place Vaikuntha. I can't do that. But Krishna can do that. And I can be an instrument. How fortunate. It's the humble mood of service. That's the antidote. And we're looking out for the disease. For that question. Yes? No? Okay. Anyone? Okay, thank you. Yes?
I'm thinking in respect to occupational duties, how to bring this mode of service, like, despite of the situation where, like, I mean, live in the association, like devotional environment, and also, like, as for the activities we do, like, there, and sometimes it looks like, it's crazy, like, they talk something and they do something and they again they go back, like, these kinds of things are going on, like, so at those.
They're in Maya, is what you're saying. So, how can you be in service to Krishna in Maya's kingdom? Keep it short, because I'm going to end. You're a devotee and you have a service to do while you're in that situation. Minimally, you're an example. There's Krishna's teaching, Bhagavad Gita. There's teaching about Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam. You have the opportunity, the good fortune of receiving those teachings. Now, you're to be an example of, here is what one does who is a devotee of Krishna. And part of it is, I'm cordial, but I don't really get involved in the blah, blah, blah stuff. What to speak of, the backbiting stuff. You know, the Prajalpa stuff, and the mean-spirited viciousness, competition, skullduggery, backroom, you know, cut the other guy down kind of program. I don't participate in that. I do my activity in a diligent manner because it's for Krishna, and I'm trying to be a perambulatory Bhagavad Gita in life. And people may not understand that's what I'm trying to do. That's okay. That's what I'm trying to do. And because you're carrying that service to Krishna mood, the internal potency will be with you and protect you from the contamination of the atmosphere and set an example. Be like a light in that dark place. That's your service. So I'm not going to speak mean-spirited things and do, you know, those things and talk gobbledygook. You know, I'm not going to eat. Yeah, I'm just going to be an example of this is what a devotee of Krishna is. So we're sitting over here, you know, very peacefully on a Sunday morning, and people in the workplace, they're not here. But in the workplace, you can be the example of what's taking place in the morning class. Subliminally, you know, they may not be aware at all of what's going on, but you're aware of what's going on. You're acting as an instrument of the internal potency in the workplace. Maybe some people will be infected with that internal potency. You know, you bring prasadam and other kinds of things that they also like. They see your screensaver that's got a picture of Krishna, and they say, you know, what's that? Etc. A little. And one day someone's going to start asking some questions. Yeah, you're a little different than everybody else. What's going on? What's your program? You're so calm all the time. Where do you get that inner calm? You know, I'm agitated all the time, and especially lately, you know, what this guy did, and yada, 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 and you know. But you stay calm. How do you do that? What's your secret? Tell him it's a secret I can't tell you. No, come on, tell me. Okay. That's the beginning. So simultaneously you're protected and they're getting some contact with the internal potency of Krishna. Unknowingly. Off the radar screen, no one's disturbed. You're not like in their face with, you know, anything. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His Holiness Srila Prabhupada Maharaj.